kendimi yatağa demem. Değerliğini cazıbı çekeyim.
Tsongkhapa in his tantric text called Guha Samaja, which is called Clear Limb of the Five Stages, where it says that you should feel overjoyed that you found such an opportunity to engage into such a practice, and therefore listen to the teaching with radiance and a smile on the face and delight in the heart. And we, at this point also, we got these few days for listening to the Bodhicharyavatara, the ways of life of Bodhisattva, and we are fortunate. And as you know, that this text, Engaging in the Ways of Life of Bodhisattva, is written by an Indian scholar and practitioner, Shantideva. And since the text came out in India more than many thousands of years passed away, so Shantideva came in the 8th century. So since then, this text has become one of the most important source of training the mind, and since then many followers and practitioners, they were able to develop fresh bodhicitta and were able to strengthen and enhance the mind that they have already developed. And therefore, whatever state of our level of our mind may be, and at least even in the case of those people who doesn't have the intelligence and the capacity, even in our case, we can at least do the minimum practice of respecting this text and placing it reverently on your head. Even that will accumulate a lot of merit, and therefore we must feel very privileged that we have access to such a precious teaching. This text is precious because the ultimate objective, that is to achieve enlightenment, is something very important for us and for everybody. And it is this So therefore all of us should listen carefully with much appreciation, and so in the case of the listener, that should be the motivation, and also in the case of those who are explaining the teaching, they should explain it without attachment to him and name. And if we are unable to do that, then and if we are unable to develop such a positive motivation, then even if we sit and attend a teaching, but it might become a non-virtuous action. So therefore, in my own case, as a teacher who is sitting on a high throne, facing towards and giving the teaching, it is very important for me to cultivate a very altruistic motivation. Otherwise, sometimes it is possible that even for a teacher who is sitting on a high throne and looks great, but his mind may be influenced by outwardly concerns, thinking that people might think I'm a great scholar or great practitioner, so you might develop this kind of attachment. So even though in the form of a student or in the form of a teacher, you may be participating in this session of listening to the teaching, but because of your motivation, such a practice may not become a genuine practice. And therefore, whenever such negative attitude arises, it is important that this is improper, that is, this is unsuitable, and you should immediately rectify your mind. And in this way, the practice that you will do will be beneficial to you, beneficial in preserving the teaching of the Buddha, and beneficial in helping other sentient beings. And because of this, the very place, the very environment where you practice and meditate on such teaching will also become peaceful and calm and tranquil. So therefore, if you are able to undertake a standard practice, a genuine practice, then it will benefit oneself and benefit everybody. And therefore, we should listen to such a teaching with pure motivation. So we are reading, I think, verse 31 from the chapter on effort. So in accordance with some other translations, it may be verse 32 or 30. Yesterday we finished reading verse 30. And so we start reading verse 31. The verse 31 reads that in order to fulfill the purposes of other sentient beings, you should earlier we discussed about how to remove the obstructive factors. Now here we are talking about the facilitating factors, the favorable factors for your practice. So verse 31 explains that in order to fulfill the purposes of sentient beings, you should first of all have the power of, you should accumulate certain positive forces. The first force is the force of aspiration. And when you have genuine aspiration towards spiritual practice, and if you have a wish to give up negative things and adopt certain positive things, then you are able to develop stability. That will induce appreciation and joy, and that will also help you to know the time when to stop when you are tired of doing the practice. Now, the meaning of aspiration here is you will be able to develop genuine aspiration towards spiritual practices if you have a sense of fear towards the sufferings as a result, and by reflecting on the advantages of the positive counter forces, and therefore you should eliminate the obstructive factors. And as a facilitating factor, you should develop aspiration and also pride. Here, even though we have used the word pride according to the Tibetan word, but the actual meaning of this word is not pride or arrogance, but it's a kind of self-confidence. So you should have aspiration towards spiritual practice, and also you should have self-confidence and enthusiasm towards such spiritual practice, and also you should know when to rest when you engage such a practice. And during the actual practice, you should be honest and maintain mindfulness and conscientiousness. And through this way, you'll be able to develop the power, which is called power of being able to control over your body and mind. And therefore, you should make effort in developing these six powers to develop your perseverance and effort. And now with regard to the force of aspiration, you can cultivate this by thinking that I will destroy the immeasurable force of myself and other sentient beings. And even you should make a determination thinking that even if I need to make effort for countless eons just to destroy one fault, I will never get discouraged. So this means that in order to achieve enlightenment, you need to get rid of all the faults. And in order to get rid of all the faults, you must at least get rid of each and every individual faults. So in order to get rid and eliminate each of these individual faults, even if it takes countless eons,
you should not get discouraged. But right now, if you judge your situation, your present state, you do not see even a part of making such an effort in eliminating the faults. So therefore, you should develop a feeling that it is really improper for me to remain or stay like this when I have all the sources for experiencing suffering. So how is it that still I can sit like this and not getting frightened? And likewise, in order to actualize the state of Buddhahood, Buddhahood is a state of completion of all the positive practices, and therefore, in order to actualize all these qualities within myself and within the mind of other sentient beings, I will make an endeavor to actualize all these qualities for myself and other sentient beings. And what to talk about all types of qualities, even for achieving just one quality like that of a major sign or major or minor sign of the Buddha, even if I need to make my mind habituated for countless eons, I will not get daunted. So this means that, however, right now you do not have even a part of those practices, and your mind is not habituated with even one of these part of practices. So it is strange how I have wasted my life, which I've found today, and which is so difficult to find. And verse 37 reads that I did not do the virtuous practice of making offerings to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and also I did not venerate and respect the Sanghas, and similarly I have not offered peace and happiness to other sentient beings, and also I have not contributed towards the teaching of the Buddha, and I have not fulfilled the wishes of those that are poor and deprived. And verse 38 reads that I have also not given fearlessness to those who have the fear, and I have not bestowed or given peace to those who are deprived. And this being the case, it seems that my life, which is a result of so much pain that my mother has experienced, is all just a waste. So in other words, this verse is saying that since I did not do any of these virtuous deeds, what's the purpose of my life? Is it simply to create the pain in the womb of the mother? And in other words, you can also explain this by saying that in this way, not only I have wasted my life, but so if I waste my life in this way, then it seems that this very purpose of my life is simply to create suffering in the womb of the mother, and having taken birth, you engage in the act of eating food, wearing clothes and so on. So many sufferings have been created, not only to your mother but to other sentient beings. And first of all, by remaining in the womb of the mother for more than 9 months, you have created so much suffering and pain to the mother. And right after you were born, you are almost like a helpless worm or insect. And even in the case of animal, the young ones are very much dependent on the kindness and compassion of their mother. So therefore, they all create a lot of problems to everybody. And it is because of my lack of aspiration towards the Dharma in the past and also now, I am experiencing such plight today. So therefore, realizing this, who will or who should give up aspiration towards the Dharma? Meaning that we should not give up such an aspiration towards the Dharma. And this is important because in the past, because of your having not undertaken any spiritual dharmic practice, this is the plight, that you have no reliable happiness, no reliable peace, and therefore in the future also, if you continue to lead a such life, it is sure that you will not experience peace and happiness. So therefore, if you are someone who really has the intelligence and who is really able to judge between what is right and wrong, then you should never give up enthusiasm, interest and appreciation of spiritual practices. Today in this world, there are more than 6 billion of human beings in this world. And if you reflect on the state of this, more than 6 billion of human population, there is a section who accept one or the other form of religion, Buddhist or non-Buddhist. So there is this one section of population who are not satisfied just with the material facilities, but who talk about the need to have love, courage and so on. And then there is another section of the human population who say that spirituality or religion is of no use, it is of no benefit, that it is like a poison, that it is only for deceiving the human beings, and therefore intentionally they try to discard and ignore religion. And then there is a third section of the population who neither have a positive attitude nor a negative attitude towards religious practice. So they spend their life in a casual way. And in terms of number, I think those who belong to none of the two sections, believing or not believing in religion, I think that number will be more. Among the religious believers, the most populated religious followers is Christianity, and Muslims, and then Buddhist, and then Hindus. So there's this one section of people who believe in religion, another section who criticize religion, another section who are just neutral. So those who are neutral, let us not talk about that for a while. Now let us compare these two people, who one who believes in religion, the other who doesn't believe in religion. Both of these groups of people are same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And there will be differences in terms of identifying or recognizing suffering and happiness, and the method to remove suffering and method to cultivate happiness. Apart from that level, both of these two sections of people are same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, and therefore they're in terms of the objective is same, that they want to minimize and remove suffering, and both the groups would like to cultivate happiness and experience happiness. So now compare these two sections of people, whether those people who believe in religion are happier or who criticize religion are happier. And it is clear to all of us that simply having material progress is not a guarantee to have happiness. And we can see this right from Russia to many other countries. For example, in the Russia, when it was ruled by communism, they criticized religion and tried to destroy religion. And similarly, it has happened in Cambodia and also in Tibet. And in those days, there were people who really were totally against religion and tried to destroy it from its very root. And by destroying religion systematically in that way, what have they achieved today? Now look at those different states under Russia. And even though there was a time when they tried to destroy religion as much as they could, But today, faith in religion is much more stronger than ever. And similar is the case in Tibet or in China. And those people who were trying to destroy religion, they followed all types of methods, aggressive methods, and more kind of peaceful methods. But they use all the government machines and propaganda and the force to destroy religion and to discourage people following religion. But they didn't achieve much success. Why is it? And when we undertake our spiritual or religious practice, we are not saying that if you undertake spiritual practice or religious practice, your stomach will be filled and you will get good clothes. This is not what we are talking about. And of course, there are some beliefs in some religions who say that if you pray that you will be successful, thereby you will have some material achievement and success. But at the same time, nobody is saying, or no follower is saying, that you will directly be benefited with these material gifts. And of course, there could be some very stupid people who might think that if you pray today, then in the evening you will get something to eat or something. So that is not the general message of the different religions. And if your focus is for material progress, then this should be achieved through personal physical effort and not through spiritual practice. And recently, many Christian missionaries visit places like Mongolia, and if they start some projects like educating students and so on, that is good, but there is really no use for them to try to convert others and spread Christianity. And in fact, when I visited Mongolia and met some of these missionaries, I told them that this is not a healthy trend. And I told them, in my own case, I never try to encourage others to practice Christianity. So among some of these Christian practitioners, missionaries, and some of them are really kind of very ignorant, and they tell some of these Mongolians saying that you must embrace Christianity. If you embrace Christianity, then there will be real progress in the country. Look at the Western people. And if you practice Buddhism, then there will be no progress in the country. There will be no material development. Look at Mongolia, look at Tibet. So that's what they tell people. So that, I think, is really quite it's very silly and totally based on ignorance. So this is done by some of very ignorant people. Then one of my Mongolian friends, he told me that he answered this by saying that the material progress that we see in the world is because of scientific progress, and when science started developing in the West, then Christians put a lot of obstruction and argument. But if science goes on making progress from the Buddhist practice, there will never be any objections. So what I'm saying is that all these different religions, their main emphasis is how to become a better person, how to transform and change one's mind. And when I visited Peking, I met whether I should use the word met him or had audience with him, or I don't know, but I met Mao Zedong a few times, and I must be honest and say that at that time I had some respect with him, and he was really a great revolutionary. But later on, after he made the revolution and when he got the power, then there was no self-discipline, because he doesn't have the qualities of a person who has disciplined his mind, and then later on really become a very corrupted person. But in the initial stage, he really has the courage, and who really has this willingness and wish to help the majority who are poor. So at that time, I had some respect to him. So probably I should some honorific word saying that I had an audience with him. And so later on he become more and more worse. So I shouldn't say I had an audience with him, but I should say I met him several times. So during our last meeting, he suddenly sent me a message saying that he wanted to see me quickly. And I was attending a meeting when Liu Shaoqi was leading that conference meeting, and I get a kind of message saying that that the Mao Zedong is waiting for me and he wanted to see me. And so I went to see him. So that was actually my last meeting with Mao Zedong. And he started explaining the importance of knowing the minds of the public and how to guide and lead people. So he was giving all those instructions and advices based on his own experience, and he told me some useful advices, and he was also expressing his close feeling towards me. Then he concluded all his advice by saying that religion is poison and it obstructs the development of the country, and if there are many monks and nuns, that will also hinder the development of the country. And as you all know, Tibetans used to have many monks and nuns, and at the time of Dumtomba, around 1000 years back, there was a census, and at that time Tibetans used to have around 10 million of population, and then with the passage of time now we have around 6 or 7 millions, so around 3 million had decreased. Probably it is due to people getting more ordained as monks and nuns, so there is some element of truth. But when you see from a more important and perspective viewpoint, and if you think about how much contribution this monasteries and the monks and nuns had made in bringing about peace and happiness in the mind of all the Tibetans. And for example, you can see one very important result of such spiritual practice is that all the Tibetans talk about all mother sentient beings, the peace and happiness of all mother sentient beings. And even today, so many people are showing interest in the teaching of the Buddha and in the way of life of the Tibetans. So therefore, even though the becoming monks and nuns might have obstructed the increase of the population, but it produced a very good society with good peace and happiness. So anyway, that was not my main topic. My main topic is, what did people achieve after having intentionally abandoned religious practice? They did not achieve better happiness and peace, and not only they didn't achieve much happiness, but they experienced more difficulties, problems, and therefore today we see that even in those countries where for some time religion was intentionally discouraged, in those countries and places people today are showing more interest and enthusiasm towards religious practice. And even in the Tibetan society, and it is possible that people may embrace to different religious traditions. And in the beginning of this century in Tibet, we had some people who were Christians, and there were some who are Muslims. And we even used to have one very elderly person in Dharamsala, and he was from Amdo, and he was a Christian. And so before he passed away, he even said that he wanted to construct a church. But somehow, since he was the lone Christian among the Tibetan society, And since already there is a church out there, so before he passed away, he couldn't materialize his wish. So what I'm saying is, in the Tibetan society, we have people who embrace to some or some other religious traditions, and it is also possible that who may not embrace to any form of religion. So in general, if you make a comparison between the two, believer and non-believer, and who is happier, and even in the case of a believer, a religious practice, we are not talking about not enjoying material facilities, and it is of course an impossible task. And not only that, in Buddhism it speaks about actualizing the four facilities, four perfections. That is, on the one hand, you should undertake spiritual practice and actualize a state of permanent liberation. Then on the other hand, you should actualize some kind of mental satisfaction through actualizing material facilities. So we are encouraged to use these facilities. So therefore, from the point of view of religion in general, and particularly from Buddhist viewpoint, we are not obstructing material development, material progress, material development. We indeed need such material progress, but what we are saying is that you should not undertake a material development that is based on exploitation, that is based on corruption. And the only way to remove such corruption, exploitation and deception is that you should have self-discipline, and that you should develop loving kindness, that you should develop compassion, loving kindness and altruism, and that is indeed a wonderful instruction. And so therefore, what is encouraged is to make a material development which is not defiled by improper ways of action. And if we are able to lead such self-disciplined way of life, then the whole material progress will be based on non-violence, non-harming. In that case, we'll be able to preserve the environment, and we will not harm other sentient beings. And that is why, if you see the Tibetan tradition of medicine, it is primarily based on a collection of different herbs, plants, and so on. And we do not experiment with animals like cats, like rats, and so on. Whereas if you think about other medical traditions, much is dependent on experimenting the lives of cats, monkeys, and so on. And in order to experience human health, human beings play with the lives of countless animals. And in fact, I very often meet many of my Western friends, and particularly when I visit some of the bigger universities, and then some people even write to me a letter saying that, His Holiness, you should not visit this university because this university does a lot of experiment with animals. So more and more people. So these days there are people who are putting objections against hunting and so I'm getting a little bit digressed, leading from one topic to the other. So what I'm trying to say is that if there is a spiritual religious practice, then all the development and progress that you will have will be complete, because there will be internal mental progress as well as material development. And therefore, in the case of a religious practitioner, the material development will be compassionate and non-violence. In the case of someone who criticizes religion, their material development will be violent. So, however, there are people who only use the name of religion and use the name of, use religion as a kind of mask, and then you might commit many negative deeds. So in that case, it is much better to use your own body and own religion and lead a normal way of life. But unfortunately, these days there are people, and particularly today, when there are many people who show interest in Buddhism, and particularly in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, there is every livelihood that some people will use this religion as a means of doing business and earning money. So that's why the great master Chösang Rinpoche has said that when you sit on a high throne and give Dharma explanation and give the initiation, you look great. But when you get totally carried away by the offerings and so on, I felt very sad, and it's a great disgrace. So these are very appropriate instructions and remarks. Verse 40. Now, with regard to the practice and development of virtuous qualities, aspiration is extremely important, as is said by the Buddha, and the root of that is meditation on the result of your actions. Verse 41. Sufferings and mental unhappiness and many types of fears that you get, and the separation from your desire, all these are a result of having engaged in non-virtuous actions. So this means the sufferings that sentient beings encounter, the unpleasant and unhappiness of the mind, and the fears that we get from human beings and non-human beings, and being separated from sensual objects, these are a result of negative deeds. But with good motivation, if you perform a virtuous deed, then whatever life you take, in each and every of these lives, because of your having collected merit, you will always have happiness. And for example, you will have a good physical form, and even if you are born as an animal, you will be happier among all other animals. Now, in the case of someone who commits negative deeds or who commits sins, even if that person aspires to have happiness, then whichever life or whatever life they take, there they will always encounter suffering, and they will also be destroyed by weapons and so on. So that's why we see some people that whatever they do, they fail and do not achieve success. But at the same time, sometimes it is also possible that in the case of some people, when they are when the power of the negative deeds decrease, and when their positive power, the power of their virtuous deeds increases, and then since some of the heavy negative deeds that would project into a negative state of existence becomes lighter and thinner, then the remaining negative deeds will be experienced in this very life. So therefore, some Dharma practitioners, sometimes you see some very sincere Dharma practitioners who may be working very hard and undertaking very good spiritual practices, but still you see these people experiencing one or the other form of suffering on and off. So this probably is a good indication that the result of your heavier negative deeds are now decreasing and becoming lesser, and you have started experiencing the few remaining sufferings. And it is because of this, in this life you encounter some misfortunes and so on. Now, in the case of some people who might have committed really very heavy negative deeds, and but still you see them achieving much success, so in this case, their virtuous deeds are really now becoming very weak, and their negative deeds are becoming extremely heavy, and because of this you have started experiencing even the result of little virtuous deeds that you have done. And so the results of those negative deeds will be experienced for many lives to come. So when you have accumulated strong heavy negative deeds, it cannot be purified by experiencing some small sufferings in this life. Verse 44 explains about the results of having performed virtuous deeds, and it explains that you will be born in a very happy state of existence. So you will be born in a pure land. For example, if you are born in a pure land, and then you will not have to take birth in a womb which is very smelly and tight and so on. And you will be born in a pure land, as is explained in verse 44, that the place where you will be born will be vast and full of fragrance and cool and soothing. So you will be born at the heart of such a lotus, which is vast, full of fragrance, and which is cool and soothing. And your radiance, you will be produced through the radiance of the teaching of the Buddha. And and the development will be through the light of the Buddha. So that is the result of having committed negative deeds. Verse 45 explains the results of negative deeds, and in terms of your body, in terms of the feature of your body, the skin of your body will be ripped off by the messenger of the death, and you will be in a terrible plight, and they will pour in your mouth the molten copper liquids, which is melted by extremely hot fires, and you will be stuck with daggers flaming with fire, and your flesh will be chopped into hundreds of pieces, and you will then fall into the burning iron ground, and these are the result of many non-virtuous deeds. So such differences are due to whether you have accumulated virtuous deeds or non-virtuous deeds. Verse 46, therefore you should develop aspiration towards virtuous deeds and show respect to it and meditate on it. And therefore, by following the method of the Vajradvaja is a sutra. This is from this is from the Avatamsaka Sutra. There are six volumes of the Avatamsaka Sutra. I was able to receive the transmission of that. And it contains a lot of precepts on the Bodhisattva. And it is said that the great Indian master Atisha visited Tibet, and when he saw the translation of the Avatamsaka Sutra, then he greatly admired it, saying that without such a text, how could the Tibetans practice the development of Bodhicitta? So therefore, you should follow the method of that. You should follow that method as is taught in the sixth chapter of Vajradvaja Sutra, and then you should develop self-confidence. Verse 47, whatever practices and actions that you perform, first of all you should judge it and examine carefully whether you will be able to do it or not. It is true to say that all of these practices have to be done by stage by stage. But in the beginning, you should really judge it and think carefully whether you should start doing that or not. And even though all these practices have to be done gradually, but at least right now, if you are not ready to such a practice, then do not start with it. Because once you start something, and if you are unable to complete it successfully, then you will not be able to complete that action. And similarly, you will get the habit of not being able to perfect and complete other virtuous practices as well. Verse 48, and if you make a start of something and unable to complete it, then in the future lives also you will be habituated with such a practice, such a way of life, and that will then produce negative deeds and sufferings, because that will then reduce laziness, procrastination. And when you are unable to complete anything, then you will feel repentant and get discouraged. And when you get habituated with this kind of practice, then you will end up leaving everything uncompleted, and your respect will be then lost, and you will also not be able to achieve the purpose, and therefore you will experience suffering. And similarly, other activities, you will also not be able to achieve other activities. And having started the action, even if you start something, then at the time of the result, it will also be inferior and not good, and you will not be able to achieve it. So therefore, before starting any virtuous deed, you should judge yourself whether you will be able to do that or not. And once you have started it, then even if you encounter certain obstructions and hindrances, you must instill three types of self-confidences and continue with your practice. The three self-confidences are self-confidences in with regard to the action, with regard to the afflictive emotions, and with regard to your own capacity and power. That means in the case of action, you should have self-confidence, thinking that this is a wonderful action and I must do it, and you must develop that kind of self-confidence. Self-confidence towards afflictive emotions means that you should develop the confidence, thinking that I can certainly gain control over these afflictive emotions. Self-confidence in respect to your own capacity means that you should think that I will alone will complete this job without having to depend on others. So self-confidence in terms of action is to think that I will alone do it. That means in order to fulfill my purposes and purpose of other sentient beings, I will alone perform all these activities. Verse 50. Maintaining self-confidence towards afflictive emotions means that you should think that even though myself and all other sentient beings are controlled by afflictive emotions, but the difference between me and other sentient beings is that in the case of other sentient beings, they are unable to see the faults of afflictive emotions. And in my case, at least I see the destructive nature of afflictive emotions. So therefore, in the case of these sentient beings, because they are controlled by afflictive emotions, they are unable to fulfill even their purposes. And therefore, these sentient beings will not be able to control these afflictive emotions like me. And therefore, I will do the task of controlling these afflictive emotions. And for example, and then third is the action in terms of then also develop self-confidence towards your own capacity, and particularly should be able to hear, see the meaninglessness of undertaking so much effort towards inferior activities. And that's why sometimes I jokingly tell some of my friends who do business, I tell them that you are a servant and slave of money. So first of all, they have a lot of difficulty not being able to have the money and not being able to have the wealth. And when you have the money and the wealth, they get a lot of worry that people keep on coming to them, requesting them to lend money and give them wealth and so forth. So it is in this way that they are very much harassed. And and that's why I, during the recent years, we see a number of Tibetan monks visiting Taiwan, aspiring to get some money, and if you have money, then you always have great difficulty. If you have the problem of the taxation, and that's why you have the black account and the white account, and there is the constant worry about your wealth and money being stolen by other people. And so even for such minor purposes, when you put so much effort and energy, then in my case, when I talk about achieving enlightenment for the sake of myself and all other sentient beings, something that is useful for me and for others, something that is temporarily beneficial and beneficial in the long run, therefore it is extremely worthwhile for me to have this self-confidence, thinking that I will do the job of doing this job. Now when you do this, you are not ignoring other people, you are not belittling others. So therefore you should not perform these actions with arrogance and pride, because not to have pride and arrogance is the best. So here he is talking about two kinds of pride. One is kind of pride which is actually the self-confidence, where you can think, I can do, I can help, I can practice. And then there is other negative kind of pride, which is the conceit and arrogance, which should be discouraged. Because if you develop the afflictive arrogance, then you are controlled by afflictive emotions. If you are controlled by afflictive emotions, then the afflictive emotions can destroy you. So this is explained in verse 52, where it says that when one encounters a dying snake, then even the crows, they act like as if they are eagles, and they play with the body of the dying snake. So therefore, if you do not have this capacity and determination to do something, then even small negative emotions, small downfalls will harm you. And therefore, verse 53 also says, if you get discouraged and stop making effort, then you can never be able to get rid of your deprivations and your poverty. And this is what I have been telling to some of the new Buddhists. And sometimes I find that these new Buddhists in India, they are very discouraged, and they are not making any effort, and they think that we cannot do as those people who are of higher caste can do. So I have been telling them that we are all same human being, we all have the same human intelligence, we all have the same capacity. So do not get discouraged. You should come forward and do the job. And that's what I have been telling my Tibetans, that we are passing through a very difficult period, but still there's no reason to get discouraged, particularly in terms of doing virtuous deeds, in terms of doing positive deeds, in terms of doing something that is good. You should never get discouraged, and not this should be the attitude, not only in terms of leg of spiritual practice, but also in terms of leg of material facilities. You must make effort rather than sitting somewhere and keep on complaining. So therefore, without losing lovingness, loving kindness, and without losing compassion, we should acquire material facilities. And also when we fight for freedom and struggle for freedom, your freedom and struggle, the purpose of your struggle should be actualized with love and with compassion, and that is in tune with spiritual practice. And therefore, one should never get discouraged. And when you have the confidence, self-confidence, and then if you make an effort, and particularly if you have altruism, and if you have the wish to benefit other sentient beings, then there will be genuine self-confidence. On the other hand, if you lead a life of duplicity, if you say something nice in the face of the person and do something nasty at the back of that person, then because of this duplicity of life that you led, it will be difficult to develop genuine inner strength or inner spirit or self-confidence. Therefore, it is important to develop this kind of self-confidence, thinking that I can manage and I can perform this task. And if you develop such self-confidence and make the effort, then even the greatest of afflictive emotions will not be able to destroy you. Therefore, with a stable mind, with a firm mind, with a mind of self-confidence, you should destroy the downfalls. You should destroy the afflictive emotions. Because if you are defeated by the downfalls, then to talk about gaining victory over the three realms is just a joke. It's just a matter of love. And if you yourself is controlled by these afflictive emotions, then it is just a joke to say that I will achieve enlightenment and gain victory over the three realms. Verse 55. I will gain victory over all the afflictive emotions, the enemy, the afflictive emotions, and I will not allow any of these afflictive emotions gain victory over me. And therefore, I, who is the child, who is the follower of the victor, the lion, that means Buddha, therefore, since right now you are practicing the Bodhisattva way of life, therefore you can call yourself as a child of the Buddha, who is the lion of the man. And therefore, I will abide in this kind of self-confidence. Verse 56. And all these sentient beings are destroyed by the afflictive arrogance, the afflictive pride. And this kind of arrogance is not the kind of self-confidence where we think about gaining victory over afflictive emotions. And a person who possesses self-confidence, such a person will never be controlled by the enemy, the afflictive emotions. And instead, now in the case of those people who are discouraged and who does not have the self-confidence, these people will be controlled by the afflictive arrogance. And if your mind is puffed up by the pride and arrogance of afflictive emotions, and then one will be led into negative state of existence. And because of this, even if you obtain the life of human being, then the real joy and happiness of being a human being will be destroyed. And even if you And even if you are born as a human being, you will be devoid of perfections of a human being. Your face, your body, etc. will be ugly, and you will be enslaved by others, and you will be born as dumb and stupid, and your face would be ugly, and you will be fragile and weak, and always you will be exploited and affronted by others. And when you thus when your mind is filled with the pride of afflictive emotions, and when you are controlled by these afflictive emotions, if such are even such afflictive prides are categorized as kind of self-confidence, then in that case, who could then be the object of compassion? In other words, therefore, Shantideva here is saying that if you categorize the ordinary afflictive pride as if you include that as self-confidence, then how could we identify the object of compassion? And verse 59, and in order to gain victory over the pride of afflictive emotions, when you maintain self-confidence, then such a person is really the man with confidence, and such a person is really the one who will gain victory over afflictive emotions, and he is the real hero and the brave person. And such a person will be able to destroy the afflictive arrogance. And having destroyed the arrogance of afflictive emotions, one will be able to bestow and bestow upon the sentient beings the actualization of the peace and happiness of liberation and enlightenment. So it is in this way such a person will be able to fulfill the results of state of enlightenment as is desired by sentient beings. Verse 60. Verse 60 explains that just among the animals, the lion stands out, and no other animals can harm a lion. So similarly, when you maintain self-confidence and do not allow it as being controlled by afflictive emotions, and when you develop it to its fullest extent, and being able to face or stand against the afflictive emotions, then because of that, even if you live within a host of afflictive emotions, you will not be harmed. And verse 61 reads that out of many sense powers, we regard the eye sense power as something very important, and it is because of this, even when we encounter great fear, we try to guard our eye. So therefore, even if some intense afflictive emotion arises, you should remain attentive and make sure that you are not controlled by afflict emotions. For 62, even if I am burnt or killed or beheaded, I will never bow to the enemy of afflict emotions. Therefore, in all situations, I will perform only those that is proper and will engage in nothing else. Verse 63. Just as in the case of a person who enjoys sport, such a person would look towards the result of such a game or such a sport. So therefore, in the case of such a bodhisattva, in order to actualize the seven precious practices, one should develop great appreciation towards one's actions, and one should never get satisfied by such an action and enter into such an action with great joy and enthusiasm. One should develop appreciation and take special interest. So such an action of bodhisattva should be developed and strengthened further without satisfaction. Verse 64. In the case of an ordinary people, for one's own personal happiness, whatever actions we do, like business, for example, when we do a business, it is really not sure whether we will get big profit or not, but still we encounter a lot of hardships and we make a lot of effort. So in the case of such an action, it is really not sure whether there will be profit or not. However, in the case of a practice like that of following the ways of life of bodhisattva, it is definite there will be a happy result. So how could you remain without undertaking such a practice? Verse 65. Now, in the normal pursuit, with development of attachment, anger and so on, we get some kind of satisfaction. For example, when you develop anger and express anger to others, you get some kind of satisfaction. And likewise, if you allow attachment control you, you also get some satisfaction. But we never get satisfied with such experiences. Even then we engage into it. If this is the case, then through the bodhisattva practice, the result will be peaceful and happiness and full of merit. Then in this case, why should you get contented? Why should you get satisfied? So without satisfaction, you should train the ways of life of bodhisattva. Verse 66. And therefore, in order to be able to complete such an action of a bodhisattva, one enters into it with aspiration, trust, belief, firmness of the mind, and because of this, you do not get tired and exhausted, because there is so much appreciation towards such an action. So you would enter into such an action of bodhisattva just like an elephant enters into the water when it is scorched by the heat of the sun. Verse 67. However, when you are physically and mentally tired and your power declines, then you should take rest. Because if you do this, in other words, you should take rest so that you are able to undertake the practice later on with much more strength and vigor. Because right now our body and mind is not perfect, and it could get tired. And therefore, whether it is mental contemplation or one-pointed meditation, when the power of the mind declines and when the mind gets tired, and therefore, to ensure that later on you will be able to undertake good practices with fresh mind, so you should leave the session and take a rest and do not force upon yourself. what is important is to undertake a genuine practice. So therefore, whenever your practice is not becoming smooth, then you should stop it. And when you are able to complete successfully a certain cycles of visualization and so on, and then leaving the preceding cycles of visualization, you should move on to the latter. Verse 68, and how to adopt mindfulness and introspection during the actual meditation. Just as when an old warrior goes to the war, you should on the one hand be able to harm the enemy, and at the same time make sure that the enemy never gets an opportunity to harm you. So you need to take these two into consideration. So likewise, when you undertake the practice of the mind training, it is important to ensure that the weapons of the afflictive emotions do not or could not harm you, and you should be able to use the weapons and throw it against the afflictive emotions, but at the same time make sure that these afflictive emotions are unable to harm you. So in short, it is saying that you should be really a clever person. For example, when we undertake Dharma practice or religious practice, you should know the teaching. Now, thinking about the importance of study, if you just keep on studying without meditation or practice or daily practice, then you will be defiled by many day-to-day afflictive emotions. Now, there are some people who would say that it's important to practice rather than knowledge. Then in this case, these people, even though they make concerted effort towards their day-to-day practice, but because of their lack of knowledge, their wisdom will not grow, and therefore all their practice will become limited, and there will be no much spiritual progress. And therefore, whatever practice we do, we should be able to, on the one hand, enter into day-to-day practice, and at the same time make sure that your mind is not contaminated by afflictive emotions. Verse 69, for example, when you are in the process of fighting your enemy in a battle, and then as soon as you see your sword falling down, then realizing the fear that your enemy might pick it up and hurl at you, you should immediately pick it up. So similarly, as soon as mindfulness, as soon as you lose your mindfulness, immediately you should remember the fear of hell and maintain mindfulness. And just as poison spreads in your body through the circulation of the blood, so similarly, as soon as there is an opportunity, your mind will be pervaded or permeated by false and afflictive emotions.